kids enjoying the holiday. This is And Another Thing. Welcome into our show after a gluttonous holiday weekend where you may be languishing, lethargic, and maybe it's not because of the overwhelming intake of carbs and tryptophan, but because of football. It's the time of year when football is important on every level, and if yours is like a lot of other American families, you have purchased your team's gear, packed the car with kids and snacks, tailgated, and utilized your best outside voice in support of a team or player on the field. But hold on. Football as we know it is a bit different in New England, dating back to 1875 when Harvard and Yale played their very first game. Tickets sold for 50 cents each. Yale paid Harvard a whopping $75 to play, and yes, 2,000 fans showed up at Hamilton Park in New Haven. So it could be argued that because of football in New England, we are all experiencing fandom today. The demise of Thanksgiving high school football in Massachusetts has been debated for a while, but Boston English took care of Boston Latin in the oldest continuous Turkey Day game in the country last week. Final score, Boston English 66, Boston Latin 42. It was the school's 134th game, and the state has 11 other high school football rivalries that date back over 100 years. In fact, New England, making up only 4.5% of the U.S. population, has about one-third of the centuries-old high school football rivalries in all of America. That's according to the New England Historical Society. But before high school rivals, there are peewee and youth football leagues. Data from the New England Division of the National Pop Warner Football Program indicates that though this region is the smallest overall, it has the second largest number of football teams nationwide. And in Springfield, its younger football leagues are growing even more. The Longhorns welcome players at different age levels. They have three teams and a brand new partnership with the Northern Connecticut Football League. Coach Mike Ravosa joins us now. Welcome to And Another Thing, Coach.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Quick question right off the bat, which a lot of listeners may want to know. At what age do parents start to send their future football stars your way?
It all depends. Kids grow at different rates. Kids are maturity levels. They're physically the way they're built. Every child is different, so it all depends on, again, it all depends. It can be totally different.
When you get the younger kids, what is it that excites them about playing football? How much do they really know about putting on the helmet and banging into another kid?
Well, when we get them, they don't know much, which is a good thing because all our coaches are USA football certified. We've taken precaution. We've taken classes on concussion protocol and a lot of other things. So we teach the right way to play football. But kids, they get excited to put the equipment on right away. And we do a lot of practices before they even hit. We hand out equipment. We do a lot of things to make sure that they're safe and they understand, the dangers that football can have if you're careless and reckless.
And you made a very good point about the dangers of football. Maybe an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old doesn't know that, but do you explain this process to the parents as well, the injury process, the risk of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to. But I think our staff, most of our staff played football in college, so we have a little bit of experience and wisdom on our side, and we're doing things a lot smarter. The way we practice is smarter. Like I said, being USA football certified, just setting a high standard, understanding concussion protocol, understanding how equipment works, how equipment should be fitted, just doing the extra things that could really, really save a life or save an injury.
You are with the Springfield Longhorns, and you're growing. Right now you have three teams. Tell us about that partnership that you have with Northern Connecticut football, and how does that expand in the area?
So we're the Springfield Longhorns. We're a local Springfield team, and pre-COVID, we had maybe four or five teams. We had a lot of kids, and then COVID, like all sports organizations, it hit us pretty hard. So we're kind of rebuilding, but we're actually coming back stronger than ever because kind of a lot of parents and a lot of kids at first weren't interested in playing football, and then they saw our program, they saw our coaching staff, they saw how engaged our coaches are with the kids and the parents and the community. So we had about 52 kids this year, which is down a little bit from previous years, but we already have next year we'll probably be at 75 or 80, which is going to be huge, which is exciting. And we've partnered with the Northern Connecticut Football League, which saves the parents in travel, because we were with Pop Warner traveling from Springfield to Rhode Island, Boston, New Hampshire. That's a lot, especially for young kids, young families, maybe have multiple kids playing other sports. So by joining that league, the NCFL, which is extremely competitive, you know, we're playing teams in Enfield, Windsor, Ellington, right down the road. So it saves a lot of travel time as well.
Springfield Longhorns youth football coach Mike Ravosa, thank you for joining us on And Another Thing today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate the time.
What is it about football in particular that motivates us, that energizes us, bonds us, and let's be honest, brings out our wildest energy and anger, to be honest, as a fan? From Pee Wee to the pros, we are the ultimate fan. There are studies, terms, and diagnoses of this attaching and erratic behavior. In the local region in the last few weeks, UConn football added former NFL coach Jim Mora Jr. as its next head coach. And UMass reinstated the leader of its most winningest football program, Don Brown, who will be announced tomorrow. He rejoins as the football's program head coach. This news has excited fans, the public, the students, and the fans plan on coming out. Brett Dinkin is a licensed sports psychologist and life coach who has worked with entrepreneurs and professional athletes. Brett, welcome to the show. When researching fandom, the terms burging and corfing pop up. Can you explain what those terms mean from a fan perspective?
You know, I just looked this up today, just out of fascination. Basking in reflected glory. In other words, someone else's success enhances your self-esteem or self-image. Kind of fascinating, right? How many people get caught up in something outside of self in order to sort of bolster your self-image. I mean, you think of celebrity worship and, you know, religious worship sometimes, and even iPhone worship. So this is pretty common.
And then the opposite of that basking in reflected glory is the corfing, right?
Yeah, cutting off reflective failure. In other words, no one likes losers or being associated with losers. So that's just a lot of common sense for most of us. But if you think about Hollywood, right? I mean, one flop and like an A-list actor could be in real trouble, right? No one likes being associated with losers.
And more sports terms. When teams win, we're there to celebrate. When teams lose, or you lose, let's say your favorite player, I don't know, Tom Brady gets traded to a team in the South, people are angry. What is it from a psychological standpoint that allows us to attach but then become angry when we don't win?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot. Obviously, the positive is the, you know, the sense of synergy and camaraderie, you know, and fellowship that you get from being part of something greater than yourself, like a team or identifying with a team. And, you know, on the downside of it, obviously, it's not particularly healthy when your identity is limited. Your consciousness is what I would call pretty, you know, limited. And so what I'm always helping people do is diversify their identity and expand their consciousness. So when it gets too narrow, it's us versus them, and that gets super unhealthy. You see it in politics today, right? You know, Team Blue versus Team Red, you know, us versus them, and then win at all costs type attitude.
How can one not become so erratic when watching the game of football? Is that possible, Brett?
I mean, you don't have to, you know, you could do it for fun and creativity. The, you know, erratic, you know, is obviously a negative, pejorative term, but whatever. But the positive side of that is a ton of passion. Obviously, if you take it too far, then it's, again, it's going to be unhealthy. Erratic sounds like, you know, people that are sort of impulsive and all over the place and, you know, and, you know, if they take it too far, then they're probably going to get into a fist fight, right?
How do you, what do you tell your clients when they need to calm down?
When, you know, look, I'm teaching meditation, mindfulness, visualization, breath work, and a lot of like positive self-talk and so on. So everybody that I work with learns how to meditate, practice mindfulness, and they learn how to use their breath. In other words, 3-4 seconds in, 3-4 second hold, 3-4 second release. You do that 3 or 4 times, you're going to calm down, right? If you drop and do 15 or 20 push-ups, you're going to calm down, right? It's like, you know, you're just going to burn out your energy. So there's just lots of ways of doing it. Or you could just observe. You know, if you start observing whatever's in front of you, you'll calm down and you'll get more present.
Brett Dinkin, a Connecticut-based private practice sports psychologist. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
This region of the country may not have the top-ranked college football programs, but it does produce top players. After the break, we learn the differences between Division I through Division III and ponder why more women aren't involved in the sport that they also love. Stay with us. More And Another Thing after the break. You're listening to And Another Thing, where today we're exploring football fandom in New England and the country. Maya Schrader is off today. I'm Dara Kennedy. This holiday weekend, many Americans, myself included, were walking cliches of family, food, and football. Faith could be thrown in there as religious holidays were also celebrated, but more directly, the prayers to God for a team to succeed or for a player to get in the game from a loved one were in abundance, regardless if you are a churchgoer or not. And like church on Sunday, pro football is also a ritual for some. With local players having made it to the big stage, Massachusetts and New England birth many guys we've rooted for over the years. Henry McKenna covers the region. He's an NFL New England Patriots writer, and he co-wrote the New England Homegrown Legends list for USA Today.
There are so many. Mark Bavaro is a tight end. New Englanders might recognize that name because he's actually one of Bill Belichick's favorite players to ever play at the position. And then another super popular player, Matt Hasselbeck, another guy who came out of New England and ended up, you know, playing in a Super Bowl. So two big names, I'd say, that might be familiar to New Englanders.
How is it that so many players come from the area, but yet football doesn't seem to be as primary in this area?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the college football atmosphere is extremely absent here. We don't really have a super strong tradition. And I think, hopefully I'm not offending too many big college fans and athletes from the area, but we don't really have the same level of tradition that so many schools in the South have, Alabama especially, but it really extends to the entire SEC. And, you know, our list was about players who came from New England, but most of them actually really, they just played in high school here and then moved on to bigger programs in other parts of the country. So while we do actually produce a great deal of talent, they end up going on to play and develop that talent in other parts of the country. But, you know, as far as how I would say this area did really develop its love for football, I think there's a great deal of credit toward Tom Brady and Bill Belichick because, you know, where the college scene is sort of absent in fanaticism.
Our show today is focused on football. And the idea here is that the holiday weekend was family, food, and football. And the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter what level of football you play, especially in New England, where the football system is a little different. How much of that do you think plays a part in the recruiting of the homegrown talent to maybe leave the region?
It's just that recruiting comes down to where you can have the most success or where you think you can set yourself up oftentimes for making the pros, right? So if you have aspirations of getting to the NFL, you look at a place like Alabama. I keep using it as the best example.
I know. Can we get out of the SEC, please?
Well, how about Notre Dame or even your school of Michigan? They just are factories for first round picks, and that's where you want to be. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great and refreshing to see so so many levels of competition in this area. Even, I think there's a level of respect for it, you know, all over New England. There's a cornerback on the Patriots named Jawan Williams. He came out of Vanderbilt, but he likes to go to local football games. Every Friday he goes to high school games. And so, you know, every once in a while he'll post on Twitter, hey, where should I go? What's the great game of the weekend? And he'll drive to that game on his own, just to watch a little high school football. So I think like that just shows kind of almost religious element of this, you know, in our culture.
Some others on your list of the All Patriots homegrown legends is Anthony Sherman. And I don't know if a lot of people know that he is right there from North Attleboro High in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yep. Anthony Sherman, a former fullback with the Browns. Jordan Todman, Donald Brown, guys that grew up in this area and then stuck around to play in Connecticut. There are those players that do stick around.
A lot of women are fans of football, but it's not available to many women to actually play. Boston does have the Boston Renegades, which is a woman's professional football team, but they hardly have anyone to play against. What are your thoughts on how women are perceived in the game of football?
Right. Yeah, I think that they are unfortunately underrepresented in the entire football community, but also especially the coaching ranks in the NFL. We've seen over the last few years female coaches emerge in the NFL, which is great, and they're starting to move up the ranks with a few different organizations. So that's a positive step. The NFL really needs to, as they do as well with minority candidates for coaching positions, they need to encourage honestly, a white men's club to be more open and help develop talent that isn't just, again, a white man. So I think we're seeing the NFL at least acknowledge that they have a problem.
With the players that you've covered, especially here in the New England area, have any of them ever voiced concerns about those head injuries that we continually hear pop up?
Yeah, you don't hear them talk too much about it while they're in the NFL. I think that they probably are concerned about NFL being upset at that. I mean, it's a PR nightmare for the actual league, and the league is only interested in the bottom line, which is the money. So they discourage players from doing pretty much anything that could interfere with their ability to make more money. And that includes the discussion about chronic head injuries, CTE, and concussions, all things that them from playing the sport that is a collision sport. The NFL really needs to continue to make ground because they've got a long way to go to improve player safety and show that they actually care about the players rather than making money off the players.
That's an interesting point when you talk about concussions and head injuries, because it's a trickle-down effect. Even on the collegiate level, the same type of injuries happen. The only difference is those players aren't paid, but they can still get injured.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, you know, it's moving forward compensating college football players. They're generating enormous business for college and universities. So, I mean, there's no reason why the players haven't been compensated earlier, and the NCAA is making an effort now to find ways to compensate players or at least allow them to seek endorsements, which is long overdue.
Henry, in your opinion, what makes New England football different?
I would say two things come to mind, and the first stems from the Patriots. There's just the expression, the Patriot way. But at every level, when I think of New England football, I think of the fall, and I think of the foliage. It's popping, it's turning orange or red, yellow. And so that's what I think of. I like to see that sort of interesting backdrop of, you know, the natural world changing just as this football season is really starting to kick into high gear. And even the snow games up here are pretty special as well. The weather is a unique element of New England football that you really can't ignore, and that makes it great.
Henry McKenna, sports writer for USA Today. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing. As we heard Henry McKenna just mention, the fandom of football isn't reserved for only the pros in top-rated schools. In fact, as we next hear from Roger Crossley, 30-year member of the National Football Foundation and chair of the New England Football Writers Association, they are responsible for awarding the region's best in class. The majority of players don't play in collegiate Division I and are not top-in-the-nation recruits. But the excitement of simply stepping on the field can be more raw and authentic, even with less to play for.
Yeah, I think that any program that is successful has a culture. And it's not just the best players. It's the best players who learn how to play together. It's the best players that learn who the leaders are. There's nothing wrong with being a follower in football. Not everybody was born to be a leader. And if everybody in the world were a leader, there wouldn't be any followers and nothing would get done.
Talk to us about the difference in football from the Division One, Two, and Three levels, especially here in New England.
Yeah, if you break down football in New England, at the Division One level, there are the three football championship schools, UConn, UMass, and BC. Then there's 12 football championship division schools. There's 8 Division II schools and 33 Division III schools. So obviously there's much more opportunity at Division III, but all told through the United States, there's about 675 total colleges that play football, and 54 of those are in New England. The Division I FBS schools in New England have been struggling a little bit recently. UConn and UMass have, playing as independents, have found it difficult to compete. The advantage of being an independent is you get to play a national schedule and you play all over the country. The disadvantage is, as far as any type of championship is concerned, you don't have anything to play for. So it's kind of difficult to get players to get into a program like that and then buy into a culture that really doesn't have a lot to play for other than pride every week. If you're a college recruit and you're thinking of going to a Division I school and you have the opportunity to play at Virginia or North Carolina or Clemson or someplace south, or you get a chance to play at BC where you're going to be playing in the cold wind of the north toward the end of the season, you know, it's not a hard choice for a lot of kids. Schools at the FCS level have done very well. Holy Cross won the Patriot League this year. They're the only New England school that's in the Patriot League. Sacred Heart won the Northeast Conference this year. What you're going to find is the Division II schools are people that are maybe just a step slower, but quite often the same size. But they're still very good players, or maybe just a little bit too small in some places to be able to forge a Division I scholarship out of that. And Division III is what I like to call the pure football. You know, nobody's on scholarship. They're playing because they love the game and really for no other reason. And it's a way to, if you're good enough and you want it badly enough, a way to continue what you did in high school that you loved.
When we look around our nation and just over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, we noticed all the big programs, right? We noticed, you know, Michigan finally beat the Ohio State. You see what's happening with Georgia down in the SEC. And then when you look at New England, you don't necessarily think football first. You may think hockey. You think, obviously, basketball. Mm-hmm. Or is it just ingrained that football is all that matters, regardless of where you play?
Well, I'm not sure football's all that matters, but it's big. I mean, if you get down into the South, into the SEC country and ACC country, it's a religion. It's not just the sport. It's just something that people worship, and everybody talks about how we did this and we did that and we did the other thing. Well, they never put on a helmet. They don't know what they did, but they're a part of it because it's their religion. In New England, it's not the same. I think part of the reason is because UConn and UMass have struggled a little bit. When Boston College is good, they seem to get a nice following. Otherwise, it's pretty much alumni, family, and friends. I think part of the issue is that the high schools in New England don't produce a lot of top caliber FBS players. Zavarian does a very good job of getting a lot of people into FBS programs. St. John's Prep, to a certain extent, does. But overall, there are not football programs at the high school level that consistently send people to the FBS and FCS ranks.
How do players then, if New England doesn't turn out a whole bunch of good high school programs, how do so many of them land in New England?
Well, I think that's why you see so many Division III programs in New England, because it does give them a chance to continue their football careers if that's what they want to do. The options in New England are varied and vast because of the large number of Division III programs. That's where more concentration in New England happens. You know, if you're a good player, a good college is going to find you, a good college program is going to find you, and then if you're a good player at that, then the pros are going to find you no matter what. For example, there was a player from Division II Assumption that played for the New Orleans Saints for 3 years. He was a kick returner, all New England kick returner for 3 years for us and the New England Football Writers. The Saints found out about him, brought him in for a free agent tryout, and he lasted for 3 years before he got hurt. So if you're good enough, they're going to find you.
When we come off of this time during the holiday season, it feels like football is more in focus than at the beginning of the fall or even in for the pros heading into the Super Bowl. What is it about this sport, specifically in New England, that keeps us so focused and frenzied?
If you're talking about high school, I think the fact that the Thanksgiving rivalry games go on is a huge thing. In Massachusetts, those Thanksgiving rivalry games are great. You know, people start their day in the morning with their school playing their rival school. Then they go home and eat. And by that point, the pro games are on. And on Fridays, you get more college games. On Saturdays, you get a lot of college games, including games that have great impact on championships for conferences and so forth. And then on Sunday, you're back to the pros again. So it's just a four-day fest of football.
Roger Crossley, chair of the New England Football Writers Association. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
You're welcome, Dara. Thank you.
Continue the conversation on social media. Find us at AAT on NEPM. You'll also find more episodes on the And Another Thing page at NEPM.org. And tune in tomorrow as we explore inflation and the rising cost of, well, seemingly almost everything. I'm Dara Kennedy. Have a great night.